You're listening to the ISF Podcast, for your organization's better cybersecurity. Your host, ISF CEO Steve Durbin, is an expert in leadership, business culture transformation, and cyber strategies for today's top enterprises. I'm producer Tavia Gilbert. In today's episode, Steve sits down with Dr. Amy Affey, founder of Affey Performance. Her mission is to make the tools of elite performance accessible and human. Amy is a nationally recognized performance psychologist and executive coach with more than two decades of experience working with NCAA champions, Olympians, Navy SEALs, Fortune 500 leaders, and individuals navigating complex lives. She shares how business leaders can help their teams feel more connected to their organization's purpose and talks about what drives high achievers. Steve and Amy also discuss stress in the cybersecurity industry and why rest is absolutely crucial for success.
Amy, hello. It's lovely to have you on the podcast. Thanks very much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to have this conversation. I'm very excited to be here.
You have worked with all manner of people, from Olympians, professional athletes, business leaders, and indeed US Special Forces. And we're going to get to some of those in a moment or two. But I wanted to talk to you specifically today about two themes. One was around psychology, particularly in the workplace. And secondly, which is related to that, is the whole issue of wellness. So I suppose just to start, and perhaps the most important question of the whole 20 minutes or so that we've got, is what are you actually seeing at the moment when it comes to the psychological state of leaders and workers in general in today's business world?
Just to back up for a second, I certainly was at Arizona, worked with those Olympians, those NCAA champions. For over 25 years now, I've worked with those athletes, special forces members, military, business leaders. And recently, in the last 2 years, I'm focusing on private industry, those corporate athletes, leaders, and teams. Much of what I'm seeing in the private industry space are some of those challenges that we were dealing with those high performers in those other industries of sport, tactical athletes, for example. One, people are feeling the grind, right? So in the headlines, executives who are taking leaves of absence because of heightened levels of anxiety. You're seeing executives' careers shortened by burnout. So that long-term chronic sympathetic engagement that really breaks us down physically. Certainly, we know the health conditions that can arise from it, but also just cognitively and emotionally and spiritually. So we are seeing the impact of the grind happening both in the acute with the anxiety or the chronic with the burnout. Also with the advances of technology, you would think we would feel more connected. And yet the reality is that in private industry, individuals and teams are feeling more disconnected than ever. So you'll see statistics of engagement dropping. Gallup, I think, put one out highlighting the 21% decline in engagement. You'll see the gap in purpose being reported. Oftentimes, executives will report feeling very connected to the purpose or mission of the organization. And yet those more frontline workers, the operators, they aren't reporting that high of a connection with that purpose. So you're seeing this disconnect in a number of different ways. If you think of the availability of the human system, so the financial pressures that are resulting in almost 40% of Americans now report having a side hustle to help that income flow into their household income, or perhaps the increased costs in childcare and how that's impacting many women in particular availability to pursue higher level positions, promotions, or expanded responsibilities in their roles, kind of those external demands that are really stretching the human systems and their availability and their roles in the workplace. So those are some of the things that I'm seeing with leaders. They're asking great questions. What do we do? I think first and foremost, what you'll hear is the decline in the empathy because we are all in this together. So whether you're an executive, a director, a manager, or individual contributor, we are all feeling those pressures. We're all experiencing the disconnect. Perhaps many of us, regardless of the level, are experiencing that heightened anxieties or distress on our systems. And so the first thing that I fall back to is how can we reconnect and create that sense of trust, belonging, and then that empathy, regardless of your role in the team?
I don't disagree with your assessment at all, to be honest. I came across just the other day something that I'd never seen before, which was three particular project managers in the same organization who all left on what was called stress leave. I'd never come across that before. And I was really, really surprised. But obviously, that points to, I would suggest, a little bit more of a deep-rooted problem in that particular organization in the way that they're trying to manage things and run things. But my question was, why do you think we've ended up in this place? How did we get here?
Like many things with the human system, it's very complex. So there's going to be many factors that kind of influenced this. I think certainly right at the gate, people talk about the impact of the global pandemic in our societies. If you look at the workplace, we were thrusted into remote work, and humans don't really change that quickly. And so the immediate distress that came with that, certainly you saw the big data stats around stress, mental health at that time. But as we have evolved, healed, hopefully, and moved forward from the impact of, say, such a significant stressor, we also are still trying to find our new way. And that change process is so difficult, right? You hear it in the debate of return to office. Do you go hybrid? Mm-hmm. Do you mandate back in the office? Those types of things. People have very strong opinions and visions of what they want for their teams. Every human goes through a change process that looks different. I mentioned disconnection. I think we see that in the statistics, the big data that shows since the impact of smartphones, right? Even in the younger generations, we see the impact in how they are meeting people, how their opportunity to build resilience and hearing the word no, for example, even in social or dating situations. I know Professor Tim Galloway, he's talked about how we can help people get up and out. And even in the social environment, building that resilience. I think technology in many ways connected us and in many ways disconnected us. I'm a mom of two much grown girls, I guess technically teenagers, but they would challenge that because they're much older teenagers. You know, you go into our communities and how we are raising our children, many of those social skills, the opportunities to build them aren't as present. My mom said, go outside and come home when it gets dark. So from a very early age, I had to learn the skill of organizing, perhaps leading, perhaps following, confronting, developing our own rule set, enforcing the own rule set, and how we engage with our peers in the community. And then certainly accountability of recognizing when the sun starts setting, I better get myself home. So I think just from a very early age, we have had experiences that have honestly removed some of those kind of organic opportunities for connection. And I see, because I hold relationships so dear, when we think about how humans change, how humans adapt, I see that connection piece where it's been fractured to be really impactful in some of these larger statistics where you hear of people taking leave because of anxieties or the burnout. What's going on with how we connect? What opportunities do we have when the skills that we build to sustain those healthy relationships? There's a very high percentage in America of people who report feeling lonely on a daily basis or not having that one person that they can turn to. So depending on the stats, the research you read, it can be upwards of one out of two adults will share that I don't have that close friend I can turn to either celebrate those wins or even be there to help shoulder some of what life throws at us. So those are just some of my thoughts that kind of come along with both my personal, the parenting journey, as well as the professional.
You've given us plenty to think about in just those few stats that you've been going through there. I want to go back to the corporate world, because one of the things that jumped out at me was you said that certainly you find that leaders have a degree of purpose. You would hope for that. Yes. But that isn't reflected, I'm paraphrasing, of course, but that isn't reflected in their staff who perhaps feel disconnected from it. What are the sorts of things that people can do to try to address that issue? Because that's a major concern for any business, right? Yes, of course, your corporate leaders should all be understanding the overall strategic direction, but they're not going to get very far if they can't take the workforce with them.
Absolutely. So when I think of that optimistic vision that those leaders have, the first thing, and I mentioned empathy, but really understanding your team, understanding your workforce, and understanding that for all who are sitting in the audience when you're presenting this to your vision to them, all of them are going to be motivated for different reasons. Some are motivated for those profits. Some are motivated for that purpose that you mentioned. Some are really motivated for the people. Like when I work with Navy SEALs and the conflicts that are going on in our world today and the heightened political overtones, many will ask, like, when you're serving, how do you jump out of that plane if you're not really bought in to that purpose? And they'll tell you, I'm jumping out. I've got the guy to the right and the left of me. That's why I'm here. So people matter. So I mentioned the P's mainly. Dr. Rob Fazio, I'll give credit where credit's due. He really provided that framework. So understand first as a leader that of those members on the team, they're going to be different motivations. And so really it takes getting to understand and know your people. Now you ask, okay, if I'm a CEO, how am I going to do that with tens of thousands of individuals? You do have to create that culture and the ecosystems for that collaboration. So, how can you look to break down some of those silos? How can you communicate in real time as best as possible? In this very uncertain world that we live in, that real-time communication matters. And so, what does that look like? If you take some of these other high-performing industries, there's team huddles. Those team huddles get together in the morning, and it's not like big, long. It's what is the area of focus? What's important now? And what might I need or help to break down any bottlenecks to that? So it's less about efficiency and more about adaptation. And I will reference General Stanley McChrystal's work there. He talks a lot about moving from that focus on efficiencies to adaptability, which is making those right choices for that moment, not just always doing the right thing. So he talks a lot about the communication, the collaboration, and being able to adapt in those moments. So, how can you create that culture? When you're communicating your vision, can you relate by some message of understanding? These are volatile times. This is uncertain. This may feel chaotic, but we've got our people, and we believe in our people and our culture to help us work through that. And we may have a process such as that team huddle. I have one CEO, phenomenal leader, every quarter. He shared back on that vision and more in depth and from a place of vulnerability and sharing a story or two from his personal journey and how it connected and supported that journey. So there are times for deep dive communications, like every quarter, what he would share on that story digitally, send out an email. And then there's other touch points that are much more succinct, but the cadence is swift to help with that collaboration in executing that vision, if you will, in real time, creating that culture in real time.
So it's trying to create this feeling of team that we're all in it together. I know that I mean, work with not the SEALs, but certainly SAS and Rangers, and things that they do share that. I am here not just for myself. I'm here for the rest of the guys, and we've all got a job to do, and we're all going to do it together, and we're all going to be successful. And that's the mindset. I'm wondering, though, whether there is something else, because I would put them into the high achiever category, these sorts of people. Is there some sort of common theme? Do they have something or many things indeed in common psychologically?
Yes, absolutely. I think first and foremost, a shameless plug, I am putting out a book on this. They're still evolving, right? Like you may have heard Scottie Scheffler's really went viral, his interview on what is it like to win and be the best at your game. That high, that sense of achievement, it really is fleeting. And then the highest of performers go back to what matters most to them. And he talked about what matters most is being a good father, a good partner with my wife. Recenter. So there is this period of reflection. We do see people celebrating those wins. And yet the highest of performers come back, they leverage the tools of reflection. You're still evolving. There's still the next day. There's then either perhaps next challenge or in their own personal journeys of how they want to grow and develop and be the best versions of themselves. So you see high performers engaging in very deliberate rehearsal. You see them engaging in very deliberate reflection, either in teams. So you mentioned special forces, the role of after actions and how they use that. So remember, the key there, it's not after, the key is action. Otherwise, it's just an after reflection. And we see that all the time in private industry. People sit back and reflect, what did we do? What would you do differently? What lessons can we take from this? And then what is the action? What change are you going to make, either in your process, in your team? your focus. So yes, I do see that we could take away many of these tools from high performers, even if we're not trying to reach a podium or jump out of a plane, and how we can use it in our lives as we are still evolving and being the best versions of ourselves, regardless of that role, whether you're walking into your workplace, your home, your communities, and how we can use that connection, how we can use the deliberate practice, how we can use that power of reflection to continue on in this journey.
Now, a lot of people who listen to this podcast work in the security industry, and cybersecurity, it's known for being a pretty stressful place. We do suffer from burnout. People find it very difficult perhaps to switch off, not least when they're in the midst of some form of attack, which sadly happens on a very regular basis. And at the ISF, we spend a lot of time trying to help business leaders and their teams, coaching them through cyber simulation exercises, how to respond. But there are two things, I think, for me that I'm not sure that anybody has yet cracked. And that is, how do you balance the need for focus and commitment? Because everybody during an attack is highly committed to solving the problem. So how do you balance that with the need to step away, refresh, and let somebody else have a go at it? Part of it is the team, I know, but I'm just intrigued as to whether or not you've got any insights there, because that is one of the key problems. Very often we see people don't want to leave the job. I'm still going to force myself to do it. But you know full well, if you've been working 12, 14, 20 hours, your mind has gone somewhere else.
So I guess what first comes to mind is in sport, not too long ago, more is better was really pervasive. Right. Like you would see it on bumper stickers, like, while you're sleeping, I'm working out and getting better. And you would see it in volume of training or the load in the training. What we came to learn and implement, and certainly we've seen the results for, is that role of recovery is just as crucial as the tactics or the strategies you're using to solve that problem, the rehearsal, and maybe it's the communication or in that performance domain, what you are drilling all the time to be able to execute. So one day I was working with an athlete who was really struggling. Like she sees her teammates doing extra reps. She knows now in the world of social media, everybody posts everything.
Yeah, of
She
course it
sees
is.
competitors doing extra reps. But she was dealing with the physical impact of that on being under recovered. Either it was from not having the energy, but also stress fractures. Like her body was physically breaking down. There's evidence of that. So when talking with her about the role of recovery, I said, "You can do those extra reps, but aren't you just being lazy?" She looked at me. The thing that those who are driven, and like you mentioned in that exercise, where you are driven to solve this problem and you'll work the 14, you'll work the 20, you'll keep going. That is what you have most rehearsed in your performance domain. That is what you know how to do. That is what, under stress, you fall back on. But to work hard, it is to step away, to work hard in honoring that problem. So the first thing I would challenge anyone is don't be lazy, right? That's the easy thing. The easy is to stay at the desk and keep working the problem. But that doesn't necessarily mean that's the solution for the moment. The other piece of that is who is to the right and left of you? How have you built your team before that crisis hits? So, for leaders of those teams, for team members themselves, what are you doing to develop that sense of trust and perspective that in those moments, how can you leverage everyone's strengths? And sometimes it is at least taking that step away to be able to the next quote, man up kind of idea. And that's pulled from sport. The flip side of that is in that crisis, the other piece that we can take away from some of these other performance domains are the roles of micro breaks or like micro dabs of recovery. So, what are you doing to fuel yourself? What are you doing to hydrate yourself? So, going into that, the foundation of wellness that has positioned you as best as you can. In these other performance domains, there's circumstances where certainly US Special Forces, they'll be up for those hours. Even more so, they'll be on shifts, right? Throughout the night. Many of the crises you're describing, cyber attacks, could be unpredictable. But also, in those times where you have the opportunity, how are you fueling yourself? How are you taking advantage and banking as much sleep as you can with a strategic nap? when the crisis hits, how can you take those micro doses, making sure you're taking care of those foundations of wellness for you? And even to the extent that situation permits, how can you take a step away, even turn your back on your computer, even if it's for 90 seconds? Close your eyes and take three deep breaths. We've seen the return of energy stores just from that disconnection in that moment. So when you're sympathetically engaged, basically you're in that fight or flight response, you're trying to solve that problem. Really, what we learn is you have to tactically drive. And in tactical driving, you're pushing that gas pedal, but you're also quickly shifting and pushing that brake. So how can you develop strategies, deep breathing, turn your back, fueling, hydration, all these other kind of micro breaks along the way to give you a little break on your human system so you can be at your best when you need to.
And the thing that strikes me is it all sounds so obvious, doesn't it? But we have to train ourselves to actually do that, don't we? It's not going to happen naturally when you're put into that situation. And so there's no getting away from the fact we need to all put in the hard work beforehand so that come the day, we're best equipped to respond.
Absolutely. And we see that Gino Auriemma, the head coach at UConn women's basketball, he's talked a lot about that. UConn women's basketball practice is by far harder than any game they'll ever play. But under pressure and under stress, we fall back to that of our training. We don't really rise up to these new strategies, these new heights under that stress. So having a plan and rehearsing that plan in less stress conditions will enable you so that when a crisis happens, it will feel more rehearsed and it's more automated to do.
You mentioned wellness, and it was certainly something I wanted to talk to you about. Now, wellness is increasingly important in today's workplace, as we've talked already about the always-on society, the impact of technology. And one of the things I've noticed, myself included, it can be exceptionally difficult to keep up with the all-important wellness regimen that you may beat yourself up about not following. What is it that we can do, whether we're in a position of leadership or anyone for that matter, to just keep up with the so important self-care when things get so enormously stressful?
The first thing I would suggest is just to keep it simple. I'm grateful that it's part of the conversation now, but now with the reels or the information that's being dispersed out there, people are being overwhelmed and thinking about a lot of nuances to it. Take a deep dive where you feel you're most interested and you think that could bring an impact. But my first piece of advice is let's just keep it simple to the basics. If you want to optimize, the number one performance enhancer with wellness is sleep. Keep it simple. The most powerful thing is have a regular sleep and wake time, right? Don't flux yourself into social jet lag just because on a Friday night you want to stay up until 2 and sleep till 10. Rest of the week, you have an earlier wake and an earlier bedtime. Second thing with activity, most of us aren't moving enough. And so, again, keep it simple. Just getting some steps, taking a walk before you go to your desk in the morning, or perhaps at lunch, or at least every 50 minutes, at least getting up, going to get that glass of water, or just move more. And so, keeping it simple with each of those, if people want to take deep dives, certainly I could share the value of that. But some of the culture around hacking and like the quick fixes, that's what I will push up against until I'm blue in the face. Building in wellness as a foundation for performance isn't about a quick fix. If we could do just 80% of this, like how can you reduce some of the processed foods in your diet? How can you make sure you're hydrating, movement, and then that active recovery? But we really do look at performance holistically like that. I mentioned the takeaway from these other performance domains is that the standard of performance now is this holistic high performance, where we take a look at activity, take a look at recovery. We take a look at basically your fueling sources or supplementation, not because of a weight number you're trying to hit or the size of clothes you're trying to wear, but it's all about energy stores. Energy physically for you to rise to demand, but also cognitively, since many of us are in more cognitive performance domains, and even down to the cellular level, how do we have the appropriate energy throughout the day? And then certainly with mindset, with wellness, perspective matters. The impact of our expectations on our teams and our behavior even impacts our own wellness. I use the phrase, what got you here won't keep you here, right? So we're constantly looking to evolve given the very fast-paced dynamic conditions that we're living and working in.
And the thing I'd add to that, Amy, certainly, which I try to do, is to try and make it a bit fun.
Please play.
Exactly.
We take life so seriously sometimes.
So if you
Yes.
do get up and if you're in an office and you're walking, some of the things I try to do, I'm not that good at it, but I try to keep count of the amount of coffee. If I'm going to the kitchen, don't make coffee, just have water. Try and talk to people, move a little bit more. You've mentioned all of that. And for people who are working at home, if they've got pets, take a few minutes to just play with the dog, play with the cat, play with the
Excellent.
gerbil, whatever it happens to be. But just fall back on that human fun piece, because we do work, as we've been talking, in highly stressful situations. And I do get the impression sometimes that a number of us go out of our ways to make life a lot more difficult than it actually has to be. It's
Yeah.
not easy, but at the same time, there are some ways in which you can deal with it. And thank you so much for sharing some of those and giving us your insights today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a great conversation and welcome continuing it at any time.
Fantastic. Thank you, Amy.
Special thanks to this week's guest, Dr. Amy Affey. We'll be back with another new episode next week. In the meantime, if you enjoyed today's episode, please take a moment to rate and review the podcast, and we'd be pleased if you'd consider sharing the episode. To become an ISF member, get in touch with Steve directly at steve.durbin@securityforum.org or on LinkedIn. Check out all our media and resources. All of it is there to support you at securityforum.org. The ISF podcast is produced by Talkbox Productions and Tavia Gilbert. Thanks for listening.